Programming is supported by Topline Construction Firm, your local women-owned roofing contractor based out of Shoreview, Minnesota. Roof replacement, both retail and insurance work. More information at toplineconstructionfirm.com.
I'm Carrie Miller. This is NPR News. Now in depth on skipping the small talk.
Life was really good and normal, even though there was this big, scary shadow following us around everywhere. And then the shadow caught up with us.
Hello.
The brain tumor kept growing back.
This is Aaron.
I miscarried our second baby.
Love you guys.
My dad died.
Talk to you soon.
And a few weeks later,
bye-bye.
So did Aaron.
That's writer Nora McInerney's new podcast, where she lets you hear the grief, the vulnerability, the joy, the uncertainty in this life that she's leading now. If you've read her book, you know this life isn't what she expected. And I think that's one of the key questions that's at the heart of her new podcast. How do you hang on to that idea and maybe that ideal of the life you thought you were going to lead and then live into the new life that you have? So today, as Nora hangs out with me in the studio, I think we'd like to hear from you on this. This is not a lemonade from lemons conversation. I want to say that. That's too simple. I think that's too glib. We'd like to hear how something that turned your life upside down influences the person you are today and how you talk about that with other people. So if something happened in your life, it really changed your perspective. It influences who you are today. How do you think about that, and how do you talk about that with other people? 651-227-6000, 800-242-2828. On Twitter, if you can squeeze that into 140 characters, at Carrie NPR. Nora's book is titled It's Okay to Laugh, and there's a podcast in my archive on our conversation on that. Her new APM podcast is called Terrible. Thanks for asking. Welcome back. Good to have you here.
Thank you for having me.
You know, I knew you wouldn't be interested in that whole lemonade from lemons thing, but I think tone is a really delicate thing in what you're trying to do here. I mean, you know, it's a level of intimacy to hear you in my earbuds talk about this, and it's different than reading you on the page. I'm interested in how you thought about the tone.
I think that the tone of the podcast came kind of naturally to me. The book obviously is called It's Okay to Laugh, Crying is Cool Too, because those are the two facets of any huge thing that happens to you. At least for me, I was raised by a humorous man. I was married to what I considered the funniest man on the planet. And the way that we got through all of these things was through humor. Obviously, it was a very serious situation. My husband had, I think, the worst kind of brain cancer you could possibly have. But when I think about that time together, what I remember is how much we laughed and how much we enjoyed our time together, even though a significant part of our three-year marriage was spent in a hospital or was spent with him being extremely sick. And that's the way that I've been able to talk to people about these things. I think people think that grief is just crying. And I did too. I'd never really seen it up close. And it took me actually a long time to be able to truly like cry about what had happened. But I was still feeling things. We were still, I think the last thing that Aaron said besides I love you was to tell me that when he died, he would always be there for me. And that I should stop picking my nose because it's gross.
Little advice, and I love you.
Right.
And I'll always be there.
And I was crying and laughing, and I promised I will stop doing that. And I haven't because I'm human. And that's just sort of the way that I've always gotten through things. And I think it's pretty natural, too. It's a way of sort of disarming the situation around you and making it a little smoother for everybody, but it's also very honest for all of us.
This is the thing I was thinking about as I listened to the podcast, that there's not a, here's what I drew from this. It's not a, something bad will happen and you will grieve and you will dust yourself off and then you will go strongly forward. I mean, what's happening with the people that you're talking to is something happened that really changed me. And I am in some ways forever changed with that. And I'm not going to pretend that I wasn't changed. And it's not always for the good. And I'm going to let that be okay for as long as that takes.
I think it's really dangerous, the whole lemonade from lemons idea.
Why?
I think that it assumes that the things that happen to you have to make you better. And these things may not. They might just hurt. They might just ruin a part of your life.
Right.
And in some cases, that's okay. I think that to say that things must make you better is putting a lot of work into something. Your job, really, when something like this happens, is just to survive, whatever that means for you. It isn't to make it more palatable for other people. Other people want to see you get better because it's easier for them to look at.
And because they care about you.
Sure.
But,
yeah.
But I know what you mean. It's uncomfortable for someone who loves you as a friend or a family member to see you in pain.
Mm-hmm. But
we have to be okay with that.
Even think of like public figures, like what gets on the cover of People magazine.
Oh my gosh, absolutely.
It's, you know, this woman who used to be on Full House did meth, but now she's a mom.
Right.
Everything's okay. And people, we want that story.
I mean, this is what Oprah built her empire. I'm a great admirer of what Oprah did, but this is really what Oprah, living your best life, no matter. Well, maybe your best life was, this is going to sound kind of discouraging, but maybe it was then. And it's not going to be that kind of quality of best life after.
And it might just be a different life.
Yes.
And I think now I'm in love again. But I'm still in love with Aaron. I'm still in love with this person who will always be 35 years old, who is the father of one of my children. I have a child now with another person who I also love dearly. And those lives are both good, but they're different. And I can love this life that I have now, but still pine for this life that I had.
Right.
And that's complicated emotionally.
Yeah.
And I think we're all carrying these hugely complicated emotional stories, but they're so hard to vocalize because when we say, like, how are you, Carrie? We keep walking down the hall and you shouted after me, I'm good. I got
it. Right. I want to say just one thing before we go to some calls here about your pregnancy and the birth of your child. I read your post about, you wrote a blog recently about having a baby and that you didn't tell a lot of people. And I immediately thought of the last time I saw you. How many months pregnant were you? Seven?
Yeah, seven.
I was so surprised that I have to admit this. I was like, what? How am I going to bring this up? It was so awkward. Do you remember that? You came and stood and I was like, I'm not going to look down at her belly because she's pregnant. How am I going to bring this up? So you wrote about that, and
you were a part of a small handful of people who knew. I think many of my family members didn't know.
Really?
But Carrie Miller did.
Just because you came. And what did I do with it? Nothing. I was like, oh my gosh, that's fantastic.
That's all you have to do with it.
But you weren't telling people why.
I think that at first I told myself I wasn't telling people because it wasn't anybody's business.
And, was that true? Or
you know, there's like a... there's an element to it where a lot of my life is on the internet and is in public, and I wanted something that was just for myself. I wanted to just feel something and just have something, and that's true. But what's also true is that I never felt safe with the pregnancy. I had had a miscarriage a year and a half before, and it felt complicated physically for me.
Mm-hmm.
I just felt like I was holding my breath for 9 months, and it felt complicated emotionally for the fact that the last pregnancy I had was with Aaron, who's dead, and that this baby was an anchor into the life that I have now, which is a good life. And I'm having this baby with somebody that I love, and now we have this family. But it made me feel almost like defensive for my old life. And that's a lot to convey to people in casual conversation. You know, it's, people would say, congratulations. And I was like, yeah. Yes. And also, you know, people, you never know how anybody feels about you know, even the good things that are happening to them are so complicated.
Well, I failed myself because I was like, why didn't I just say? Anyway, enough about that. To the phones here to Colleen in Plymouth. Hey, Colleen, thanks so much for waiting. Hi.
Oh, thank you so much for taking my call.
Sure.
It's been a whirlwind of 10 years for me, and I was listening to the conversation just now and how much a lot of it has to do with being a survivor, and I feel like I've lost an entire life, a marriage, and just a huge part of my life, and then I thought I couldn't lose anymore, and then I lost my oldest son. But it really brought out the, well, bring it on. I can take anything now, but I don't think I've ever tried to grab the life back again, although the people that have been my other kids. And that's the part I struggle with, trying to kind of resolve that their life just changed so dramatically. I feel like I can step over it somehow and climb through it, but sometimes I really don't think they can. And they're all 18 to 22, but it's a big, you know, you do sort of have to say goodbye to one, and I don't know how I could ever go back. But anyway, thank you.
Thank you for calling. Nora, what are you hearing that?
Oh, first of all, as soon as she said, bring it on, I nodded, because I think that there is something about having all the worst things happen to you, and certainly losing one of your children is right at the top of that list, I would say. Having, you know, even really never experienced that kind of loss. There's something about that many losses that makes you feel brave, like what is the worst that could happen? And the thing is, like, we don't get any pass. Like, when you hear those things, when you hear a call like that, you think, like, well, what else can happen? And
right.
Things will keep happening. Like, I'm not done with bad things happening to
yeah,
me. And so, nobody is.
So karma didn't play out for you.
There is no. Yeah.
But when Colleen said, I don't try to grab back that life. Mm-hmm. I mean, when in these conversations that I hear in your, with some of your guests on the podcast, I hear that too.
Yeah, I think that maybe that comes with age, because I don't know that I would be, like, having her children say that they can't, or having her say that her children can't climb through it
right.
makes sense to me, because your perspective is so immediate at that age, too. Like, you just
right.
have, like, so much more tenderness and, oh, yeah. That hurts.
Call from Jean in Duluth. Hi, Jean.
Hi. Thank you for taking my call.
Of course.
I experienced the loss of a brother due to suicide in a month after that. My family kicked me out, blaming me, and I spent 30 years without family. And that transition was very, very difficult. And thankfully, I had a group of friends who supported me through it. And during that time, I became permanently disabled. And being alone and dealing with that was difficult. And again, friends just rose to the occasion. So having that connection with others really made a big difference. And then a few years ago, about 5 years ago, my sisters reached out to me and we reconnected. And going forward has been such a mixed bag. I mean, it's been a lot of joy and there's been hurt in there, but healing it is just a daily process. And what I've learned through the whole period of those 30 some years has been to stay in the moment and not be focused much on the history and the agony, as to just move through it and stay, you know, keep breathing and stay focused on what I can do for me today to bring joy into my life.
Jean, I think you would like Nora's book, because you're actually bringing up some things that you, Nora, wrote in your book about, you know, trying not to be anticipatory about the next bad thing that was going to happen to Aaron and how hard that is.
Yeah, and trying not to dwell too much on the past, too. So, Jean, you actually might like my tattoo. Maybe you should get one, too. But, yeah, I have the word now tattooed on the inside of my right wrist, which I remember my dad thinking was really foolish. He hated tattoos. So I got one in his memory, too, because that was our relationship.
That's what you do.
Yep, that's what you do when you're a middle child. But that's difficult. And I'm thinking now back to Colleen, too. Like, it is very hard to find that balance of finding joy or just enjoyment or just presence in the present moment, but also balancing that with the fact that you have this life that you don't want to forget. And I think that's something that you are able to learn with age, and it's harder when you're 18 or 19. And I think also Jean is lucky to have realized that the people who show up are the people who matter. I was a little surprised and at first very angry at the way that people weren't necessarily there for me or my son or even Aaron when he was still alive. And I realize now that was their own insecurity. It was something, it wasn't to do with us. It was them dealing with this loss in their own way, and that the people who showed up were important, and it wasn't the people that I had expected. But now my entire social circle, the people that I love, is very different than it was 3 years ago. And that's really wonderful. Those are people who cared enough to be there. And that counts for so much.
I was thinking about you when I was reading a memoir on a flight back by a British writer. It's called The Cadian Journal. We're going to talk to the author in early January. But he's writing. He started a journal on the night that his son was killed in a bicycling accident. He was 14. His father was, you know, yards back and saw the aftermath of it. And he gets deep into this journal and he starts to ask these questions about objectivity and privacy. And here's what he writes. How does one write a biography of a 14-year-old boy? His life is not yet lived. Is it possible to be objective when I'm part of the story? Perhaps objectivity is the last thing I should seek. And what about privacy? Cadian, which is his son, never agreed to this. Now, of course, Aaron was an adult man, 35, but you're writing about some pretty private things, and you're not trying to be objective. I wonder if you've wrestled with some of this.
Oh, objectivity, I've wrestled with 0%. Never will.
Yeah.
Like, it's our story.
Yeah.
It's mine. I think everybody who is listening to this, like, your story is yours. It doesn't matter what even the people who love you think of the way you tell it. It's yours. It's something that belongs to you. And they'll have their own story about maybe the same situation. Aaron read all of my blog posts before I posted them. He had told me when we met, you should be a writer. You should be writing only. You should be writing a book. There are certain things that I experienced with him that I'll never write about, that are just for us, that were very personal, that are just not for anyone else. And there's no way that I could even convey them because of that, because they belong to us and to that moment so deeply. And I'm betting that author has certain things about his son that will feel the same way, that maybe he'll write, but he would never put out in public.
Mm-hmm.
And I do think about that. I think about that with my son. He's obviously a part of my writing. He's a part of my life. And even then, I do make conscious decisions about the kinds of things that I share. And now he's almost 4 and he can say to me, don't take my picture. And I have to respect that.
Call here from Faraday in Lilydale. Hi.
Oh, hello. Thank you for taking my call.
Sure.
Within the last 5 years, I suffered the death of my beloved husband, followed by my older son, who was only 33, in a drowning accident. These are not events that one really recovers from easily.
Mm-hmm.
And what the author said about maybe your past is better than your, you know, present state. Maybe you lived your best days. They are behind you. That really has resonated with me. And I have relied on wonderful friends in the Twin Cities and colleagues. I am a teacher, and those things have sustained me. But this is not an easy life where things will just be the same as before. And people around you need to be extremely patient, and you need to be full of grace. And God knows I haven't achieved either. Hmm. Thank you for your the wonderful program.
I'm really glad you called. I what she said about the people around you have to be okay with that. Well, that's hard for the people, you know, around you, right?
It is. And I think
we want to all tie it up in a bow and go, now you're back to who I knew you were when.
Yeah. And I think that I've definitely, before anything bad had happened to me, I had literally no experience with suffering at all. And I can think back to times when I was close to it, when I was adjacent to it, when my friends were going through something, and how I inadvertently tried to hustle them through it, tried to get them back to normal instead of acknowledging that there had been this hole punched into the middle of their world that they were just going to have to live with. And I think it was Anne Lamott who had said, all these things happen to you, maybe both of all these, especially our last caller, your husband, your son, like now both of your limbs have been broken and you just walk with a limp. And that's your life now. And the people around you who matter will realize that. And the ones who don't will sort of fade away, which is also its own pain. But she said something about grace that takes time. I feel like I was in the anger phase for, maybe I still am sometimes. But when you do feel that, when you can give yourself grace and also give it to other people around you, that's when you feel like things actually might be okay someday.
Nora McInerney is in the studio with me this morning. We're talking about the new podcast from APM called Terrible. Thanks for asking. Of course, she's also the author of a book called It's Okay to Laugh. And some of the conversations she's having for the podcast and just within her circle of friends and family, and hearing from you this morning on how something that turned your life upside down influences you today. And that life is different. And you've had to get used to that, and your friends and your family have had to get used to that. Talk to us a bit about this morning. We've got, I think, full phone lines. You can also reach us at nprnews.org/live. I want to hear a little bit more of the podcast here before we go back to the phones. I pulled out this piece where you and your friend Mo are talking about keeping memories alive for your sons. Here's the thing I really like about this. You two do not have all the answers. You're okay with that.
We have to be.
Yeah. But you don't pretend to go, here's my one shining takeaway from all of this. There's a lot of ambiguity in this, and you let that breathe.
Yeah, we have never done this before. It's the first time our husbands have died while we had toddlers.
Yeah.
And we just, we're winging it.
So let's hear a little bit of that conversation.
I feel like as time goes by, you're going to forget the little things because you're not creating new memories with them. You only have your old stuff. And how much space in our mind do we have to remember all that when we're trying to live our lives, move forward, and raise people? That we want them to remember them too. You can talk about it. You can write it down. That's why I want to write for my son, because I'm not going to remember everything.
Oh, the pressure to try to remember everything. Yeah. Do you feel that too?
I do. And I also feel this heavy responsibility to help my son remember, which is impossible. He was almost 2 when Aaron died. And he won't have any real memories. What he'll have are things that I've told him. He'll have videos. He'll have a sort of mythology around his dad.
Right.
But, you know, his bedroom has photos of our family the way it was, the three of us. We, you know, say a prayer for his papa and for my papa before we go to bed. But still, some days he will come home from preschool and say, what was my dad's name? And I...
What do you feel like when he asks you that?
I feel sick. Like, it's that heart-dropping, you know, blood cold feeling that you get when you think that you've made a huge mistake. And I immediately think, when's the last time I talked about Aaron? Have I not said his name enough? Does he not have enough photos? And really, it's just that his little world is spinning, and he's already spent more of his life with without his father than he did with him, present physically, and trying to force him to carry things that aren't his is not helpful. All I can do is be sort of this encyclopedia of what I have from the life that we had with his father.
Okay, this is what I wondered about that with your desire to have your son know all of the things that you loved about Aaron. There also has to be an awareness that there's going to be pain that he has to take on, right? Because that's part of the story, and that you're acknowledging that your son is going to have to feel some pain around this too, if he's going to remember Aaron the way you want him to remember him.
And I think that will come with age. I think as his brain grows and he can understand more, that will mean that he knows more, but also that he feels more. So probably when he's 35, he'll think about the fact that that's the age that his father died at. And he'll have more of an understanding of what that actually means, because when I was 4, 35 seemed very old. Ralph recently told me that he thought I was 16.
Oh, 16.
And that was very old, and I would die soon. He talks about death a lot, which makes people, you know, uncomfortable. He has told a woman at Byerly's that she was going to die soon. She didn't love it. I moved our card away rather quickly.
Did you try to explain that, or were you just
it's
so complicated.
Yeah. His dad's dead. We got to go. Ooh, sorry. There's a lot of layers to this. I'm sorry he ruined your trip to the grocery store. But I know that. I know that all these things will mean something different to him. And now he is, both Mo's child and my child, they are aware of death. And they speak about it in a way that is not comfortable for a lot of people around them. But he's building that understanding. And I don't even know how. I don't know if I said it or maybe Aaron's mother said it. But he started to understand how his father died and that there was something in his brain. And he asks about other people, like what's growing in their brain? What's growing in my brain? What's growing in the baby's brain? When will the baby die? When will I die? So he's putting all that together. I know a lot of that is normal child development, but a lot of that is him trying to figure out the order of his universe.
Yeah. Call from Adrian in Sioux Falls. Hi, Adrian. Thanks so much for waiting. Hi.
Thank you. So I have lost my own father as a young adult and recently had two losses of small children stillborn. And I guess I'd like to hear your perspective a little bit about the isolation that a lot of people go through, I think, when dealing with grief. I think people have these gestures that they send out cards and want to help. But what I've experienced has been an enormous vacuum of silence, I think, where people are uncomfortable to talk or bring it up and not sure. I'm hoping that they're just not sure how to help, but it's just become a very isolating experience. If you could just speak to some of that would be wonderful.
I think you've come to the right place, because we talked about this at length in our last conversation.
And I think that's exactly, I'm sorry, and people don't know how to just say, I'm sorry, I don't know what to say. And so they don't say anything. And I think that we all go through these things, and isolation is a huge factor. It's almost like a de facto feeling when you go through these things, because when somebody doesn't give you the space to even just talk about the fact that you had two stillbirths, like, that's not something that goes away. That will be with you forever. That will always make you sad. That will always give you feelings. They are denying you a chance to be known and to be seen. And so you're in a group of friends whose lives have moved on, who have had their own babies or are trying to get pregnant, and you're alone. You're alone. I remember after my miscarriage, going to a baby shower and just sitting there, and I was in a room of 40 women and I was alone. I was completely alone because nobody wanted to bring it up to me. And obviously I didn't feel like a baby shower was a great place to be like, guess what I'm sad about? And I think that's tragic on both sides, because it prevents us from knowing each other. And these things will happen even to those friends of yours who are afraid to mention it to you. Something bad is going to happen to them. And that is literally, Carrie, why I started this podcast because my inbox has never been empty since I started writing about Aaron's sickness. And it's not brain tumor stories or dead husband stories. I do get those, but it's stories of all kinds, stories like this. And people have to tell me, and I'm a stranger on the internet, because the people around them have stopped asking or just giving them space. So that is, someone around you is going through something right now. Give them space to talk about it. Bring up their dead mom. Bring up their babies. Let them talk about it. You're not going to remind them. Nobody's forgotten that their dad's dead.
Is Adrienne still there? I just wonder if she's still on the phone line. Hey, you know, Adrienne, I wondered if, so one of your closest friends, could you say, you know, I do need to talk about this, and maybe we're going to cry, both of us, and you're going to see that I'm sad. Would you be able to say that? Then it might not feel so isolating.
I have, and because I've had a few people that have responded with being open to that conversation, and the other way that I've gotten heavily responded to is, okay, well, give me a call sometime when you want to talk. Oh. And it's a nice gesture, but it's also a way of shutting the conversation down.
Absolutely.
And moving it on to some other time. Or
it's an empty gesture. It's giving you a job. Like Adrienne's friends, she doesn't need a job to do. She doesn't need, like, this is your job. You got to do the work.
Yeah. And that's what the position you end up in is, in order to have that conversation, you really have to do the work to get somebody to.
Yeah, and like,
which feels exhausting.
It is exhausting. It's also like you're gonna be sad and then call someone and hope they're not like at Target when they answer the phone. Like you like.
Adrienne, I think you need to turn to a. I hope you can turn to a good friend to be.
I should be your friend.
I mean, yeah. Well, you are her friend.
Yeah.
Now, right.
I'm your friend now. Ditch your friends.
Okay. to the phones to Jennifer in St. Louis Park. Hi, Jennifer.
Oh, hi. Thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I actually heard Nora the last time she was on your show, and I just wanted to personally thank you because I feel like you gave me a sense of permission to still feel sad. I lost my mom 7 years ago to a cancer called extraskeletal osteosarcoma. It's mouthful, but long story short, my daughter was 16 months old, and then she passed, and then I actually got pregnant like a month later, and that really delayed my ability to be able to grieve because I had a horrible pregnancy, and I had a great birth. He's fine. But the point is that what I've noticed in raising my two children alongside my husband is that people seem to forget like the pain of being a mom without your own mom alongside you to kind of guide you through this journey of being a mother. And so I just wanted to talk about that we don't forget, and it still hurts. And I just thank you so much for, I don't know, giving us permission to have those feelings. It was really empowering to me.
I'm really glad you called because I can, as somebody who would be maybe on the outside, Jennifer, in your circle of friends, I would think the easy thing to think is she lost her mother, but she has this new baby. And so everything's okay. And so I don't really have to drag her back into the sadness of losing her mother. See, it gets easier for the people who don't know how to be with you, if we can look to that.
Yeah, and I think that having things like new babies or a new person to love, it doesn't ever replace the thing that you lost.
This is where we started out with you saying you're in this new love, and yet you still pine for Aaron.
Yeah, there's space in it. Aaron didn't disappear. I mean, yes, he did. He died. But that love didn't disappear. It had to move over, and now there's two loves in my heart, and her mother died, and then she had a baby. That baby is not the size and shape and like history of her mother. It's something completely different, and all of these new life changes make you recall your loss or make that loss almost sharper. I feel like closure is a myth, and time doesn't heal this. Time changes it. So this pain changes. It doesn't go away. That wound doesn't close over. It just gets different.
Always a pleasure. Will you come back?
Me?
Let's talk some more.
I'm not leaving. I don't know where you think I'm going.
We're just going to live in this studio.
I live here now.
No, thank you.
Squatter's rights.
The new podcast is called Terrible. Thanks for asking. And you can find it wherever you find your podcasts, right?
Yeah.
Stitcher.
Under your couch.
iTunes. All right. Thanks. Good to see you again.
Bye, Gary.